half an hour, so that means each side has 15 minutes. Could I have the entry of appearances, please, first for the people?
Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing.
Thank you. And for Mr. Diaz?
Kathy Gowdy, alternate defense counsel for Mr. Diaz, Colorado 28436.
All right, thank you. Ms. Brady, you'll have to keep track of your own time, if you will, please. Thank you. You may go ahead when you're ready.
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people. The question in this case is the interpretation of the sentencing provision contained in 18.3.203.1F, which provides that a sentence for a conviction of assault of a detention facility employee shall be served in the DOC and shall run consecutively with any sentences being served by the offender. The question is, what did the General Assembly mean when they said any sentences being served by the offender? Did they mean any sentence the offender is serving at the time he is sentenced for the assault? Or did they mean only any sentence that is being served at the time of the assault? So the bottom line question is, did the General Assembly want a link between the consecutive sentence only to the sentence the prisoner was serving when he committed the assault, so that the punishment is linked to the time, to that point in time when he was serving that sentence? Or did they want the trial court to impose a sentence consecutive to a sentence for a crime that was committed even after the assault and probably had no link to the assault at all? Under the plain language interpretation, the timing of the sentencing doesn't matter. And here's why. What matters is that the defendant must always serve an independent and additional sentence for the assault. For instance, if he gets a 10-year sentence for the assault, he will serve 10 years in addition to any sentence he's serving when he is sentenced. If he's serving no sentence when that sentence is imposed, he still serves 10 years. There's just no sentence to which it can be consecutive. Now, the majority of the Court of Appeals says that the language is ambiguous because it doesn't specify a point in time. It doesn't clarify. So did the General Assembly mean any sentences the prisoner is serving when he commits the assault, or any sentences the prisoner is serving when he's sentenced for the assault? There might be a big gap in time there, and can happen. They can finish their sentences. They can commit more crimes. Maybe the prisoner commits a crime in between, and that's not related to the assault. So why is he being punished for an unrelated crime? And that's the question that the majority of the Court of Appeals is trying to answer. If we go to the recording of the General Assembly's session for this statute, it says that the reason for the statute was to curb the violence at the prison in Canyon City. There was lots of violence going on in that detention facility. It was getting out of hand. It was 1976, so what do we do?
So are you basically conceding there's an ambiguity then in the statute?
No, Your Honor. I'm not conceding that at all. I'm saying this court should give its plain language interpretation. If this court gives the plain language interpretation, it's the word any. There's nothing ambiguous about that. Any sentence being served by the offender. Okay, and you can stop with the plain language.
And that's tacked on to all other sentences because of the nature of this crime.
That's correct.
I thought you just set out as a premise that it could apply to two different time periods.
That was what the Court of Appeals. I'm sorry.
And you think it could not?
I think it could not if we read just the plain language as they did in Benavides, and they stopped there.
And just to follow up,
yes,
on Justice Hobbs' question, maybe you could explain to us,
okay,
why you think being served necessarily means at the time of sentencing rather than the time of the offense.
Because it's present tense, And obviously, you can only impose a sentence consecutive to a sentence that is being served when you impose the sentence.
So, in fact, you're not just focusing on the word any, you're focused on the entire phrase, a sentence imposed and that being served.
That's okay. Correct. Yes. Thank you.
And I apologize. So the more critical language is actually the sentence imposed, as Justice Marquez is just suggesting, rather than the word any, on which Judge Russell focused.
Well, I think both of them are
if I'm with you, you'll accept that.
I think both are important. I think that Judge Russell did say any means any or something like that, and I think he did focus on that word. The answer to this is really on the recording. The prison population, this is what he said on the recording, the prison population is more savvy about penalties, and they will know. What will they know? They will know that if you commit an assault against an employee, prison guard, whoever, you're going to get a certain consecutive sentence. It's not going to be up to the discretion of the court. You commit one crime, you commit two crimes, you're going to get separate sentence each.
Although, of course, if we agree with your plain language interpretation, we don't even get to that legislative recording.
That's correct.
Okay. Just to make sure that you're not also relying on that at the same time. Thank you.
It seems somehow, though, in our cases, we take a little peek at that just to see if it confirms our analysis of the plain language.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I don't think that Judge Russell listened to the recording, but the Court of Appeals did, and they seem to have just ignored this, which is stated almost up front in the recording, that here's what we're doing. We have to do something to curb this violence, so we're going to make every sentence consecutive.
Would you address the sort of point that if that is what the legislature intended, it does seem rather fortuitous whether the defendant would commit another crime in between or would be sentenced for another crime or how long it takes for him to get sentenced? Would it not have been more direct to have imposed an aggravated sentence or put him into a higher category of felony or something like that?
I suppose, but we generally, when looking at the plain language, we assume that the General Assembly knew what they were doing and they chose their words carefully, and this is what they meant.
So we're not even looking at the language of the tape to confirm that, but rather you're saying it doesn't make any difference.
That's right. I don't think they looked at the language in the tape in Benavidez, and I don't think it makes any difference. But it does help. I'm asking you to stop with the plain language, but that if you are willing to entertain the Court of Appeals position that the language is ambiguous, then the tape recording does support the people's position.
So the normal rule is there's discretion in the sentencing judges to do it concurrently or consecutively.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, in this subsection F, they even make an exception for juveniles. They say juveniles can, the court has discretion because they're juveniles.
So that further buttresses the plain language that they looked at that and carefully considered that.
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Would another way of looking at the language from the hearing and the intent that the defendant be punished and know he's being punished for an additional crime if he assaults a guard, also be explained if what they were trying to do was say a defendant shouldn't be allowed to serve a sentence concurrently with the sentence he's already serving, in which case there would be no penalty whatsoever for assaulting a guard while you're serving a sentence.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is another way of putting it, and I think that's could be what happens in this case. He would get two assaults for one penalty. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You may do so.
If it please the court. The interpretation of the dissent in this case falls into the same analysis as the interpretation of the majority. Either way, a phrase has to be added to the sentence in the statute to make it make sense. In the case of the dissent, the phrase would be at the time of sentencing. That's still an addition to the statute. What the Court of Appeals ruled was that the addition of the phrase would be at the time of the commission of the crime, and it should be related, has some rational relationship to the crime that put the person in confinement in the first place.
Well, isn't the sentence imposed language tantamount to saying at the time of sentencing? I suppose that's what we were getting at with the earlier question. I gather you disagree. Help us understand why that doesn't work.
It doesn't work because of the equal protection analysis that the Court of Appeals then went into. You would have people treated differently for the same crimes and potentially. In fact, this defendant himself is treated differently because he was sentenced on the second assault before the first assault. So that one can't run consecutive to anything because it would be speculative under the Flowers rule for sentencing. It does not work on deterrence. Deterrence is the whole focus of this statute. That's why they went in and listened to the legislative tape. What do we do to say, don't do this one there? And the deterrence is, you think you're done with your sentence, you're going to do another one on top of it, 10 years. There is a penalty for doing the assault. This gentleman has a 10-year sentence. The question is not, does he get a buy and get a consecutive? The question is, does the trial court judge, who is familiar with the circumstances, have discretion under the very unique facts of this case to put it consecutive or to put it concurrent? And it's that way because it's not dealt with clearly in the statute. The statute is ambiguous. And under the Colorado statutes, if a statute's ambiguous, the court has the ability to salvage the statute by going back to the legislative intent, which is exactly what happened here.
Ms. Gowdy, good morning. I'm over here.
Oh, okay. There's a voice coming up.
Yes. Well, that's why I try to say good morning to give you a second to orient. But anyway, good morning. Explain to me again why it matters whether it was the first assault or the second assault. It seems to me that 10 plus 10, regardless of where you put the 10, is consecutive. Can you explain to me that? I apologize.
This case was very unique because he was not serving any sentence when he was in confinement. He did his hard time, and they realized it when he was brought in on the arraignment on one of the assaults. And so there was nothing in the record to explain under what grounds he was being held on summons. So in this particular case, there was no sentence to make the second assault, which is sentenced first, consecutive. If you go and do it at the time of the assault, it reaches the deterrent effect. If at the time of the assault you hit a prison guard or throw your tin cup through the food slot, which is what happened here, it makes sense. You're there on a crime, you're there on a sentence, you've done this, your sentence would run boxcars to that particular sentence, back to back. And the other way of doing it creates anomalies and ambiguity. For example, this case itself will be sent back, it may be sent back down for resentencing. Should the sentence he gets on this one then be consecutive to any other sentences he may have picked up during this period of time that has been working through the appellate courts? It doesn't have a rational relationship to that. It's like a lot of things floating around that are just then gathered in at the end and you get a consecutive sentence. To make it be deterrence, it makes sense to make it the underlying crime be the driving sentence that you use.
Except that I think that, I'm sorry, over here. if the deterrent effect that you've identified is in fact the purpose of the statute, it's not fulfilled under your interpretation here because this particular defendant didn't happen to be serving a sentence. He happened to be in custody, but he wasn't serving a sentence at that time. And the dissent approach would actually fulfill the deterrent effect that I think you've tried to identify, at least the general sense of purpose.
Well, the deterrent effect is that if you hit a GUPA guard, or in some way assault a guard, you're going to do an additional sentence. That's deterrence in of itself because it's a mandatory prison sentence, and it's a lengthy one. The deterrence effect in this thing is, in fact, rebutted by the first assault sentence he received, which is not consecutive to anything that should have been under the dissent's view. It throws everything up in the air, and it's kind of what lands first. That's where it is. Statutes need to have a basis. There needs to be a reason that they can tell the prisoners, this is why you're doing the sentence. It has to be rationally related. Prisoners are innately attuned to what's fair to them, and for it to be effective, they have to respect the fairness. And if it's simply an odd amalgamation of when you show up in the justice system, when you're sentencing this schedule, has the law changed in between, it is not rationally related, and it does create an equal protection violation. With that said, I would ask you to affirm the Court of Appeals majority opinion. I think it is the fairest in this particular set of circumstances, and remand it for resentencing as to discretionary, consecutive, or concurrent. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal argument?
In regard to the Court of Appeals' reliance on the equal protection argument, which that argument would be, it violates equal protection because the sentence you get depends on the timing of the sentence. First of all, no, it doesn't. You get a full sentence for the assault, regardless. If we follow the plain language, you will always get a full sentence for the assault. But secondly, if we look at the intent of the legislature, again, let's go to the recording, you also get a full sentence for an assault because it is a deterrent effect, because the prisoners already know ahead of time, it's their foreknowledge, and I believe they even used that term on the recording, that is the deterrent effect. And then a last point about equal protection, I understand that the Court of Appeals almost entirely relied on it for its decision, and I would just like to note that equal protection was not raised in the trial court or on appeal by the defense, and that was strictly something that the Court of Appeals decided to look at in their analysis, and so therefore this court, in its discretion, can address equal protection, but need not do so.
Could I ask you one follow-up on that? You said you get a sentence for the assault, no matter what. But is your opposing counsel's point that if it could run concurrent with the sentence that you were already serving, effectively it's not a sentence? And therefore, to simply say, if the legislature intended merely that you have to get an additional sentence for the assault, one in addition to what you were already serving, that would be sufficient to make sure that you get a sentence. You said it's the same and you get the sentence for the assault in either case, but practically speaking, that's not true if you could make it concurrent with a sentence you're already serving, right?
Well, the point is you don't ever want it to be concurrent with the sentence you're
right.
already serving.
And so is the, and I took it, opposing counsel's point was, and so the purpose of the legislature to ensure that you have to serve a sentence for that assault, that purpose is served if it has to be consecutive to one you're already serving.
Unless you're not serving one.
Well, if you're right, if you're not serving one, then it can't be concurrent with that anyway.
Well, in a sense, though, it's consecutive because even though you've already completed a sentence, you're still serving that, for instance, 10-year sentence.
And not to argue here, but just to make sure we're both saying what we think we're saying. I took it the point, though, is whether you've completed the sentence you're already serving, or perhaps if it's a pretrial matter and you're in custody, then you haven't been sentenced yet. Nevertheless, you're going to get the number of years that's required for assaulting a custodian.
Correct.
Right. So, but the point is, if you could make that concurrent with a sentence that you're already serving, then you wouldn't be getting a separate sentence. And is her point simply that if the purpose of the legislature is to ensure that you get a separate sentence, that is satisfied by making it concurrent with any by making it consecutive to any sentence you're already serving.
Unless you're not serving it. I do see your point, Your Honor.
Okay.
Aside from all that, I mean, yes. What you're saying is the legislature put these folks in a different class because they committed this kind of offense. And even if we look at equal protection, there's a rational basis there based on the fact you're going to do the time because you were in the can and you did this. And we're going to protect our people.
That's right? That's correct. Any in-custody crime, basically.
So it's a little bit nuanced about what a sentence is, but we're talking about real time in addition to anything else you have to do.
That's correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Brady. Thanks, Ms. Gowdy. Goody?
Gowdy.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your presentation. And we're ready to move on to our next case.